The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information, go to kuci.org. You are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine. Good morning. This is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler. We're your co-hosts today of In the Garden with Master Gardeners. And today is March. Oh my gosh, Tina, I think we should just call it Plant, Plant, Plant as for the title of the March show.
Wow, if March isn't the busiest month in the garden, it's sure a runner-up. For me, I think it is the busiest. I'm pretty busy in the fall when we switch, you know, to cool season stuff in October. But for some reason, I think the joy of spring and the excitement for the upcoming warm season plants makes me even busier in March. So today we're just going to be talking about planting, 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 and getting your, you know, significant other or kids or neighbors or people off the street to come help you get ready to
plant
and fertilize and start looking for those, you know, little pests that are going to come as the weather warms up. So we have a lot to cover today.
Yes. Where do you want to start?
Okay, let's start with veggies, because I always think it's a good idea to, you know, address our physical needs for nourishment, right, first. And so the veggie garden is always my favorite place to start. So March is the time in general for our whole garden, but including the veggie garden, to switch from our cool season plants to our warm season plants. And what's our favorite warm season vegetable?
Tomatoes.
Tomatoes! Yay! So March is the month to begin planting your tomatoes. You can also, of course, do it in April and May. But I love to get them in March because I love to have those tomatoes as soon as I can get them.
The sooner you get them in, the sooner you have
them.
Yeah.
So that's what we want to talk about today for veggies, is let's just go through a quick rundown of what the warm season veggies are. And then maybe we'll each share what our kind of favorites are.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So tomatoes, obviously those are everybody's top veggie. If you only plant one veggie in a pot, that seems to be everyone's choice, is to get that homegrown, super tasty, tart/sweet flavor of that homegrown tomato that you can't get anywhere else.
You cannot buy a homegrown tomato. I mean, you cannot buy anything as good as a homegrown tomato.
No. You can go to farmers markets and get close, but just remember, the growers have to pick those maybe not at their absolute peak of flavor because they have to ship them, right? And in your own garden, though, you can wait until that tomato is just about to burst. It's so full of flavor. And to be able to have it on your, you know, in your mouth or in your salad or on your plate, you know, within minutes of picking it from your own garden is absolutely the epitome of flavorful dishes, I think. Gosh, I'm getting excited just thinking about the bruschetta and the caprese salads. And
I'm right there with you. We can spend a whole show talking on tomatoes, and we will have a show talking about tomatoes.
We do a whole tomato show. But other than tomatoes, the things that we want to plant this time of year are the squashes, the peppers, the green beans, eggplant, if you like eggplant. When I say squashes, I'm talking about the whole variety of the squash family, which would be everything from cucumber, pumpkins, summer and winter squash, because winter squash is grown in the summer and it keeps over winter, just to clarify that, because I know that always confused me when I was a beginning gardener, is that you really actually planted winter squash in the summer, not...
You know what? Segueing a little bit, could you explain that a little bit more? Because a lot of people get confused because they think, oh, it's wintertime, now I plant my winter squash.
Yeah, so summer squash are the squash that grow and you harvest when they're young, like zucchini. And there's, you know, a lot of different varieties of summer squash in addition to zucchini. But you basically, they are a warm season plant. They like warm weather. You can plant them beginning in March from seed. I like to plant them from seed, or you can buy them already started. But they are a plant that likes warm weather. So we don't grow them in the winter. They're not a plant that you grow when you grow your lettuces, for instance. So that's a summer squash. You grow it and you harvest the squash when they're young and tender. A winter squash is also grown in the summertime, but those squash get larger than and are harvested at a more advanced stage of maturity. But the reason they're called winter squash is when you harvest a butternut squash in late summer, early fall, it will, if stored properly, last into the winter. And so those squash were grown, you know, before the days of refrigeration or going to the market and buying stuff year round, were grown for their storage capabilities. But you still grow the plant in the warm season.
Now, do you plant both of those squashes at the same time?
You can. You know, the best thing to do is for any plant that you're going to plant, especially from seed, is, gosh, the seed packet is your friend, right? It has all the information that you need that tells you when you should be planting these things. And look on the back of the seed packet. There's usually a color-coded chart or a little map on the back of the seed packet, which tells you for our particular geographic area when we should plant these things. So for us, you know, if you live in the coast in a frost-free zone, if you wanted to try and plant squash in late February, you know, when we're past our frost date, you could. But these warm season plants do like warmer soil, so you might want to wait until March or even April, which is what I usually do. And of course, if you lived, you know, back east, you wouldn't plant these things until May because their last frost date is in May, right? So that's why the seed packet is your friend. The other thing that you can do is you can go to Master Gardener website, and we have some great information on that website as well to give you. We have, you know, a presentation on the website about gardening month by month, which is what we do on this show. We give you hints month by month, but that will also give you a hint as to when the appropriate time is to plant these things. So again, that's the winter and summer squash, both planted in the warm season. And then the other members of the squash family would be the cucumbers, you know, which are amazing. And there's all kinds of varieties of cucumbers. And then, as I said, the green beans and other kinds of beans, if you want to grow some of the beans that you would actually harvest and dry. A lot of people don't plant those, but if you wanted to, this is the time of year to do that. And as I said, eggplant, if you like eggplant, another great warm season plant to plant.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
So since we ran through that, do you have any favorites, like a favorite tomato or a favorite pepper that you like to plant?
I don't have, sun gold cherry tomatoes. Those
yes.
are one of my very, very favorite.
So prolific.
They're prolific and they're sweet and you could eat them like candy. And I pick them and I put them in the little Ziplocs and I could send them off for lunch or snacks in the car. And they're just, I love those. But yeah. I also like planting a variety of tomatoes.
I do too. Do you try a new one every year?
I try.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try a new one and then I have some of the old standards like you do. And I like some for big tomatoes that I wanted to just put some mozzarella on, and I have some smaller ones that I like putting on sandwiches, and I have other ones that I just like throwing in a tomato salad and some for snacks. So I like having a variety of tomatoes.
I do too. In fact, every year I have to just stop myself from buying more tomato plants than I have room for, because we will repeat this over and over again when we talk about tomatoes, but tomatoes need space. They need to be planted, you know, 4 feet or so apart. And I was always trying to cram, you know, one more tomato plant in there. And it's just not a good idea because they are susceptible to fungal diseases. And if you try and put them too close together, inevitably
You have problems. And you don't, we know this by experience. You put them too close together, you end up getting less tomatoes.
Yes.
And you get more disease.
Yes.
So they need some air to air out, and just don't shove them too close together because we both have done that.
Yeah, and they're sun lovers too, so you don't want them shading one another because then, of course, they're not getting enough sun and you'll have lower fruit production. But a couple of my favorites, I always plant a couple of the hybrids that I know are good producers, because if we do have a bad year for fungal disease and we choose to plant a lot of heirlooms, which might not be as disease resistant as the hybrids, then you end up with not very many tomatoes, which
exactly.
is always so sad. So I always try to plant Early Girl and Big Beef or Champion. I try to get those. They're tried and true. They have pretty decent disease resistance for my absolute favorite longtime producer, very long season, small to medium sized fruits and great flavor. I would have to say Early Girl is something I plant without fail every year.
It's dependable.
It's very dependable.
And it's a good tomato.
It is. And then I do plant a couple of different cherries because they just go and go and go, like the Sun Gold. My Sun Gold from last year, it's March. It's still out there in a pot. Looks horrible. It's all over the place, but I just haven't gotten around to doing anything else with that pot. And I'm still getting, the tomatoes, the fruits are pretty small, and it doesn't set very many when we had the cold nights because tomatoes don't set fruit when the weather gets real cold at night. But bless its little heart, it's still pumping out a few tomatoes.
Our Sun Gold is going too. You know what? We also find out you don't get as many because it's not as much sun. It's colder. But and where I live, I get more shade.
Oh, there you go.
So it's also you have to be careful on how much shade. So if you're lucky enough to live in a sunny spot that stays warm enough, that you could overwinter some tomatoes.
You can.
They won't be as prolific. But it's when you're a diehard and you really won't eat a tomato unless it's vine ripened, it's kind of worth it.
Yeah, you can do it. I end up every year ripping mine out and replanting because I find that you just get so much better production.
Absolutely.
But this was in a pot, didn't have anything else I was going to put in that pot, so I've just kind of let it hang out in that pot, which is a comment we should make to our listeners who don't have yards is you can plant these veggies in pots, so don't think that you can't have a veggie garden just because you don't have in-ground spaces. You can absolutely have a veggie garden by using some good-sized containers. Remember, bigger is always better, and for a tomato, you for sure want at least like a 5-gallon size pot to grow a tomato in. But I have friends who grow, that's all they have. They only have patios, and they grow, all their tomatoes in pots.
I'm one of them. When I was younger, I lived in a second story of an apartment building in Santa Monica, and I had great sun, and I grew vegetables on the second story deck. And it was wonderful. Everybody couldn't believe what I had, but you don't have to have a big plot of land. You could have a small plot of land and choose what you're getting, and long as you need to get sun.
Yeah, you have the one thing that's, and let's review that just real quickly, what you need to grow veggies. You must have 6 hours of sun. So that's another reason why pots are good, or even wine barrels on, those rolling caster things so that you can move them around, because you can move pots to where you're getting 6 hours of sun. So
hopefully,
yeah. So pots are a good option. So you need 6 hours of sun. Of course, you're going to need regular access to water. Ideally, if you can set up a drip system that's on a timer so that when you go on vacation or away for a weekend, your beds or pots get watered automatically.
Or have a nice neighbor or friend. That's hard to do sometimes in apartments.
But tell them you'll share tomatoes. That could be motivation right there. And then also your soil. If you're planting tomatoes in pots, we recommend that you start with fresh soil in the pots every year. And I know that's a little bit costly to do, but with tomatoes especially, they are susceptible to some root-borne, conditions, diseases, and pests. So for tomatoes at least, and anything in the tomato family, which would be eggplant also, you do want to start with fresh soil in pots. If you're planting in the ground, you want to amend your soil with compost, either homemade or bought compost, sometimes labeled soil amendment, and you want to mix that in to a depth of at least 10 inches or so, and add an organic fertilizer at the time that you're mixing that compost in. And then if you can, rotate where your crops are. So for instance, I have 3 raised beds. I know you have raised beds. And so what we try to do is we plant our tomatoes in 1 raised bed 1 year, and then the next year we try and find a different raised bed to put those tomatoes in so that they're not going to be in the same place and be susceptible to the same diseases and pests.
I also realize that we're talking about a lot of stuff really fast right now, that we could also have people go to our website. If they have questions on any of the stuff we're talking about, we have articles, we have lessons, we have podcasts, we have everything on our website. And you could either Google Master Gardeners of Orange County, if you're driving, Master Gardener to Orange County, California. Make sure you put California in, or you might end up in Florida or New York. And then go to UCC Master Gardeners, see that. Or you can go to mg.orange.ucanr.edu, and you will find a plethora of information about planting.
Yes, and the reason we're trying to speed through this is because it's March and we have so very much to cover, and we don't want to miss anything. So I think we'll maybe call it a day for veggies. With the exception, we should talk about seeds, I guess, quickly.
Yes, please.
Yes. So how do you decide whether you should plant things from seed directly in your pots or in your garden beds? Or should you buy transplants? Well, here's the rule of thumb that I use. Any seeds that are big, like a pea or a bean or a cucumber or a squash seed, those are easy to plant directly. They like to germinate in place. They're easy to germinate in place. So the big seeds are easy to germinate. The other seeds that you should plant directly would be any root vegetables, like carrots or beets, for instance, because those germinate and do not want their roots to be disturbed, because that's what you're going to eat, is the roots, so you don't want to disturb that. And you can plant carrots and beets and radishes year-round in California. They're a great winter crop, but I still will continue to plant them throughout the year, because I just like having a steady supply of carrots especially, and they take a while to mature, so I plant those about every 3 months or so. But then for the other plants, like tomatoes, if you're gonna, and peppers and eggplant, if you want to try those from seed, I would start them in 6-packs indoors and let them get to about 4 inches tall, and then put them outside on a patio until they get nice and strong and used to the outside air, and then I would plant those out in the garden or in your pots. And the reason is the seeds are smaller. They're a little bit more fussy about the conditions they need to germinate, and so I just have better luck. I don't know about you, but I have better luck starting those indoors and then transplanting them outside.
I agree with you. Also, by planting the seeds yourself, you could pick what you want.
Absolutely.
Garden nurseries are now having a lot more choices. But if you really wanted to get into it, you can go online and pick. There's wonderful seed companies out there. And you could pick, see exactly what you want, and you could experiment with some of that. And it's a cheap thing to do.
It is. And it's so fun. One note, though, for instance, if you wanted to do that with tomatoes, you need to realize that the tomatoes that you start from seed, today, the first week of March, say, are not going to be ready to plant in the garden for 4 to 6 weeks. So you're not going to be able to plant those out in the garden until mid-April, the end of April. So just be aware that if you're really, excited to get those tomatoes going, maybe you want to go to the nursery and get one that's already started and ready to put out in the garden, because it will give you tomatoes a little earlier than ones you start from seed right now, which is why in January we were saying, order those seeds. You can still do it, it'll be a little bit later.
A little bit later. So you might plant a couple from the store now and plant a couple seeds,
exactly.
If you want to, or you can wait till next year and think about it in January. It's so hard to think about these things when it's cold.
I know.
Short days and cold. But
right.
It makes sense. But everybody will get the hang of it.
Right. So one more edible topic we should talk about, I think, and that is, do you want to add any other trees, edible, fruit trees to your garden? We talked a lot about this and had a show, in fact, on planting bare root fruit trees in January. But springtime is a fabulous time to plant fruit trees, both deciduous fruit trees, stone fruits like peaches and plums, pome fruits like apples and pears, and also March is a great time to plant citrus. So you can pretty much plant any fruit tree you want in March. Just go for it. They'll be in containers. They won't be bare root anymore. But if you want to add a fruit tree to your garden, now's the time.
And a couple things I would suggest is, if you're going to add a fruit tree and you have limited room, figure out really what is the fruit tree you're going to eat. You know, it's not necessarily the one that's on sale, but what is your family going to enjoy? And you also really need to think about how much sun it gets and how big it gets, because when you buy it in that bucket, it's not very big. Now, I keep all our fruit trees relatively small, but still they need some room to grow. So you need to think about where you're going to be putting that fruit tree. But it's wonderful just to have, go out to the yard and pick fruit and share it with your friends and neighbors.
It is. It's so much fun. And I'll just throw out one more thing, too, about fruit. And that is, you can go to one of the premier growers in the state of California if you want more information. And that's Dave Wilson Nursery. They have a wonderful website. They have a section specifically for backyard orchards, backyard growing of fruit trees. That gives you some wonderful hints, and if you have a particular variety in mind, odds are they have that variety listed and can tell you the specific time when it probably bears its fruit in your region, you know, how long the harvest period is, what the taste features are of that fruit, you know, whether it's tart or sweet or whether it has white flesh or orange flesh if it's a peach. So if you are considering fruit trees, the deciduous fruit trees in particular, please, you know, use that as a resource. We won't have time to cover all of that today, but it's a great place to go learn more about fruit trees.
You know, that's where I went. We took down a whole row of eucalyptus trees and decided to plant fruit trees. So I had a bunch of fruit trees that I could have. And I'm like a little kid because I want everything. And I went to the website, Dave Wilson's website, and I looked at chill hours. And I said, okay, I can have these, and I can't have these. And then I looked at all the ones that I could have, and then I went, what's the best one of those? So I weeded some out, and then I was planting along a fence line. And so I went to my neighbor with all these choices. And so they were all good with me, and I said, what do you want? And so now we have a fence line of fruit trees that both of us can use.
That's so nice.
And it's just really nice, and that website really helped me. It was almost daunting and overwhelming. Like, what am I going to pick? Is it going to, because it's not a one season.
Right.
Like you're going to get rid of it. It's a commitment for a whole bunch of years.
Right.
And how do I make the best decision and not just be pulling it out in a couple of years because I found something else? So I spent some time on the website and compared what they had to what my wants were, and then I figured I'm good with any of these, and I let my neighbor pick which one she wanted. And it was great. It was really fun. It was well worth it. And it took some time up front, but we're now set and it's years into it, and I'm happy with my fruit trees.
Yeah. I agree that there is such a plethora of information out there that if you're willing to spend a little time, you can get such a great selection. And one of the other things that I like is they do have strategies for backyard orchards, such as planting multiple trees in a single hole, which when I first heard that just really shocked me. But one of the suggestions that they have is you can plant 3 or 4 trees in a single hole, a fairly big hole, you know, say a hole that's, you know, 24 by 24 or 36 by 36. But the philosophy there is that you get 3 different varieties, say, of a peach. And you put an early peach, a mid peach, and a late peach in, and then you can pick peaches from May until October. And isn't that better than one peach tree that gives you all of its fruit in June, and then you're done? Now, the trees don't get as big because they're sharing the same hole, but generally speaking, I know when my peaches come in, it's way more peaches than I can possibly use, you know, in that short time frame. So it would be fine with me, and I would rather have had 3 trees in that hole, gotten a smaller yield from each one of them, but had that yield last over the whole summer rather than just, you know, a few weeks. So anyway, that website has a lot of great information.
And then you can also look up grafted trees, where you can get one tree and you might have 3 different things on it. So that's something else for you to look into.
Yes, they'll graft 3 varieties on a single tree. And sometimes you can find they're espaliered trees. So I have an espaliered apple that has 3 different varieties of apples on it. And an espaliered tree is a tree that's been trained only to have horizontal branches. And mine has 3 different what are called cordons. So, you know, picture 3 different branches going out horizontally, 3 layers of those branches. And it's a wonderful thing to go along a fence line.
Looks beautiful.
And it doesn't take up a lot of room like the canopy of a full-size fruit tree would. So in other words, the website that we're talking about gives you a lot of information about how to have these strategies that you can use at home in a small garden and get more fruit trees than you think you might have room for.
And it's amazing. I was down in, I think it was Newport, and I saw this yard that was probably 2 or 3 feet wide. And the whole yard had espaliered apples. And it was amazing because you couldn't put a fruit tree in that 3 foot
narrow space.
Narrow space. But they had a 30-foot wall of apples.
And it makes the wall so much more attractive.
It was green and beautiful, and it was just lush. Yeah. It was beautiful. So lots of things to think about.
Yeah, and if you want to go someplace where you can see espaliered fruit trees, go out to the Farm and Food Lab demonstration garden out at the Great Park in Irvine. There are probably, gosh, I don't know, maybe close to 100 espaliered fruit trees out there.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, so apples along one side of the garden, and then assorted deciduous fruit trees like plums and peaches and nectarines and pluots and so on along another fence. So if you really want to take a look and see, you know, how that works, head on out there and you'll be able to get to take a look at it and see if it's something you might want to try.
Yeah, it's a fun, if you haven't been there, it's a really fun place to go.
Yeah.
And it's free. It's great to take the kids.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful place to get ideas and wander around and check things out.
Yeah, it has themed garden beds. So, you know, there's a pizza garden and a fruit salad garden and so on and so forth. So it's kind of a good place to get some good ideas of what you might want to do in your own garden. And a lot of the exhibits are in raised beds. So if you're interested in thinking about doing raised bed gardening in your own property, it's a good place to go out and get some examples of how to do that.
And there's a lot of friendly people out there that can help you too.
Yeah, the city has a staff person out there, I believe every day from 10 to 3, 7 days a week. So and then Master Gardeners give talks out there once a month. So,
oh, tell us about that.
Yeah, so be sure and look on the website, our website, Master Gardener website that Katrina already gave you, or you can go to ocgp.org and click on the Great Park tab and the events tab, and you'll see a list of all of our talks that we have out there. There's generally one every month for most of the year, and then in April and May, I believe we have two a month. So springtime's a great time to go listen to a good garden talk.
Free fun.
Yeah,
it's a good
free
thing
fun.
To do.
Something to do, 10 a.m. on Saturdays. Okay, so I think that covers us for edibles, and gosh, we should move on because we still have so much to talk about. Yeah. So how about we move on to our pretty gardens?
Oh, well, when we're talking about pretty gardens, we're talking about Tina's garden.
No, your garden's pretty too. But what I'm talking about now are, in my world, I love to have flowers, and that can be anything from flowering annuals to flowering perennials to flowering bulbs to flowering shrubs. I just can't get enough flowers, as Katrina well knows.
Oh my God, her yard always looks wonderful. What Tina's been really smart about doing is getting things blooming at different times of the year. So you go out into her garden, and where some of our gardens kind of look dull for a period of time, there's something always popping. So what are you planting right now in March, Tina?
Well, in March, you can plant virtually anything. And so what I would advise you to do is to go out and take a look at your yard. See what you have out there that are kind of permanent things that you want to keep. So for instance, my flower gardens are kind of anchored by rose bushes, right? We have way too many rose bushes because Tina can't quit buying rose bushes. So those I know I'm always going to have. And then after I look at those plants, and it's not just roses, I have some other flowering bushes. I have butterfly bushes, you know, that are wonderful additions that bloom seasonally. I have some heliotrope that blooms seasonally. And so I look at those and I say, okay, yep, I'm keeping that, I'm keeping that, I'm keeping that. And then I look at the spaces that are kind of in between. I used to, when I was young, I would dig up entire flower beds, right? And plant, you know, seasonal plants, you know, snapdragons in the fall and winter and marigolds in the summer and so on and so forth. But the older I get, the less I want to dig. So now I have these kind of anchor perennials, the roses and other tall ones that usually flower because I just like something that gives me some color. But then in addition to that, I have perennials in the garden that are lower perennials like Shasta daisies, one of my favorites, or lavenders, another one of my favorites, sages. All of these you're going to find at the nursery this time of year. And they may not be in bloom quite yet, but again, you can take a look online and decide which ones you think are going to look well with your planting scheme that you already have, which plants have the right colors for your planting scheme, and go ahead and buy them while they're maybe not quite in bloom, but when you plant them now, they're going to get settled in, and then come June, they're going to go nuts, or May, absolutely nuts, and then you'll have color the whole summer long. I'm going to get into some planting strategies in a minute, but I'm looking at the time, and it's time for us to take a break and tell you who we are. We are KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and you're listening to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. Want to remind you that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, you can go to kuci.org. Okay, so let's get back to planting some colorful spring and summer gardens. As I mentioned, now's a great time to plant virtually anything. So if you want to add roses, if you want to add other blooming perennials, absolutely do it this time of year. You can do it either from plants that are in 5-gallon pots, 1-gallon pots, 4-inch pots, 6-packs, everything, you know,
plant.
Nothing is off limits.
You should see Tina. She is smiling right now. She is as ready.
Yeah.
She is in her element.
All I need is to be 20 years younger so that I could, you know, dig for 8 hours a day. But here's how you start to go about doing that. As I said, look at what you've already got and what you're going to keep. And then keep this in mind. We've used this phrase many times before on the show, but it always bears repeating when we're going to do some planting. And that is, think of thriller, filler, spiller. What does that mean? Just to review, when you are arranging a pot, when you're planting a new pot, or when you're planting a garden bed, you want to have an assortment of things that absolutely just catch your eye or are tall. Those are the wow things that you're going to plant. We call that the thrillers. But you can't just have an entire garden of thrillers, or it gets a little bit overwhelming. So then the next thing you want to think about is, what are going to be my fillers? What am I going to fill in around this thriller plant? So say, for instance, you have chosen a David Austin bright pink rose that grows to 5-6 feet tall and is in full bloom with, you know, these bright pink flowers. Well, that's going to take up a lot of attention. It's going to take up a little bit of space. What are you going to fill in around that plant that's going to give it balance, that's going to be complementary to it? Then think about your colors. Well, what would look good with that pink rose? Well, maybe some purple sages, maybe some lavender, right? Maybe some white Shasta daisies. So think about what you think would be complementary, just as though you were arranging a flower arrangement. If you had bright pink, what would you choose if you were at the flower market to go with that arrangement that would look pretty? So those plants would be your filler plants. And then finally, the spiller, especially if you have a pot, you want something that's going to be low and draping down the edges so that your eye is going to go up tall with the thriller. It's going to be complemented by those, you know, plants that go in the filler area, not as tall, fill in that mid-range in terms of height, and then you'll have this spiller that is maybe something as simple as lobelia or alyssum, you know, which we've all used for eons and eons, or maybe it's something a little bit more, if you're doing a drought-tolerant planting, for instance, maybe it's a low-growing succulent that spills over the edges of your path or spills over the edges of your pot. So just keep those thoughts, thriller, filler, spiller, in mind.
And normally you put, if you're planting in a pot, you normally would put the thriller probably in the middle, and then you'd fill around it, and then the spiller would go around at the very edges. Now, when you're doing that in a garden, like in a bed, how would you do it? Would you put the taller one in the back?
Yes, if you have a bed that, you know, backs up against a wall, for instance, mm-hmm. a property wall, then that's where you would want to put your tall things.
And then kind of layer it in front
of it. And then layered it in front, with the lowest stuff being in the very front. And if you have a pathway that goes along that front or stepping stones, I like to not be too tidy. Of course, that probably drives my husband crazy sometimes, but I like to have those spiller plants kind of creep between stepping stones mm-hmm. or maybe drape just gently into a bit of the pathway. I think it gives you more of a feeling of a natural environment.
It feels like you've just walked in and there. It's like God just put it there.
Yeah.
And versus a hedge. I know a lot of people like hedges and very formal, but there's so much to say of just letting it meander.
Let nature do its thing. And that can be a very relaxing and inspiring kind of look. I mean, some people like, you know, very formal, you know, French-style plantings with, you know, one color in a row and then another color behind it, or maybe a geometrical shape. But for me personally, I like it when the plants sort of intermingle and have this natural exuberance about them.
I personally like that look too, but it's completely up to you. But the idea is plant right now.
Yeah, plant.
It is wonderful. And what you do right now, it's just in this May and June, it's just everything's going to come out so much nicer. Well, it's not too late to do it later.
No.
It's not too late to do it later, but now they get their roots and they're vibrant and they're happy and they come out and say, let me roar.
They do. And in fact, we encouraged folks in October to plant perennials because if those, and especially drought tolerant plants, because if those plants get to get their roots settled in and take advantage of our winter rains, which thankfully have been so plentiful this year, then they just go nuts when the soil warms up and the sun comes out in spring. They just bloom like crazy. By planting your perennials in March, you're going to get, you know, a great bloom. It may not be quite so extensive as if you had planted the perennials in October because the plants are still getting settled, mm-hmm. but by all means, plant them. And as Katrina mentioned, my garden, trying to have things that bloom at different times, when you are going through this process of your thriller, filler, spiller, and you're trying to complement the colors, the last thing that you can do as you're reading the tags on all of those plants that you're considering is look at their bloom time. And maybe consider on the sages especially, you know, their bloom might not start till July, but it probably goes through October, right? So maybe choose some things like the Shasta daisies, which have their peak bloom in May and June, but then how cool would it be when those are slowing down to have your sages kicking in July, August, and September when it gets pretty darn hot and our other blooming plants might be slowing down. So make that your last step as you're looking at the tags and choosing your bloomers to see, well, you know, who's going to come to the party a little tardy? We might want to have some of those tardy arrivals so that the garden still has something to show off.
The tardy arrival and their friends show up.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then the other thing to remember, of course, whenever you have flowering gardens is that you do want to fertilize them when you plant them, which goes for our veggies too. I think we mentioned incorporating fertilizer at the time that you're planting. But with the flowers and also our veggies, they can benefit from additional applications of plant food or fertilizer throughout the season. For instance, for roses, we suggest after every bloom cycle, and you know, the roses go off, oh, they looked gorgeous, now you have to deadhead them. Well, after you deadhead them, give them a little more food. That will allow them to have that next bloom cycle be more vibrant, more productive than if they're just trying to make do with, you know, what's in the soil naturally.
And if you're going to have roses, you might as well have roses.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
She's smiling again.
love my roses, that's for sure.
You know, you love your roses and you love and nurture them. and then they give back so much to you. And it's like you don't neglect them. And I've seen neglected roses. And, you know, you get some blooms on there. But when you take care of your roses, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just... and we had a show on that in January because Katrina thinks I spend more time on them than I actually do. What the main thing was, which we hope you all did in January, is that you gave them an appropriate pruning and you dormant sprayed them and you cleaned up all the debris. Because if you do that in January... I don't spray ever again the rest of the year. I do it once in January. I know people think that, you know, to get really good roses, you have to spray over and over again. I'm just too lazy, and there's too much other stuff I like to do in the garden. Mm-hmm. So
and you have a big garden.
I have a big garden. So I only really do it in January. And believe me, the roses aren't perfect, but I do continue to feed them after each bloom cycle because that's pretty easy to do is just take a bag of fertilizer out there or get a liquid fertilizer spray unit and put it on the end of your hose and just go out there and spray them all with a fertilizer, not with pesticides. And you'll get that sequential bloom cycles. You'll get some disease, depends on the weather, you know, but I just think they're worth it, especially if you plant other things around them so that when they're going through their ugly stage, you know, like we all did when we were 12, 13, It's great to have those other plants around to hide the ugly stage.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, I hope everybody tries to have a beautiful, colorful garden. There's lots of drought-tolerant, low-water usage plants out there that can give you that as well.
And now's the time to do it. You don't have to do everything, but just even go plant one or two things.
You know,
Pick out something easy. It doesn't have to. You don't have to have a showcase garden, but it really, if you just pick out a couple things and plant in your garden, it's really easy. It doesn't take much time, and it really pays off.
Start with the pots at your front door or your front walkway. If you want to go a little farther than that, start with, if you have a garden bed that runs up the walkway or up your driveway, start with that. If that's all you get to, that's what people are going to see the most anyway, right? So I have a friend who's, you know, super busy, but bless her heart, along the entryway steps to her house, she always has beautiful flowers every season. That's all she can handle is that, you know, 2 foot wide by 6 foot long space on either side of her entryway steps. But you don't even look at the rest of the place because you're just focused on that beautiful little pop of color that she always has right there. So keep it simple and go from there.
Sounds great. I'm ready.
Well, we're running out of time, and again, we still have so much to cover. So let's talk a little bit about drought tolerant, should we?
Sure.
Because this is kind of my last favorite month. How about you to plant that
here.
Stuff? Yeah. We really advise people to get started in October, November, December, so that you could take advantage of the winter rains. But if you were busy and you didn't get around to it, March is still okay. You know, we're going to have March, April, May, and usually part of June where the temperatures are still going to be relatively mild. We'll get some hot days, but it won't be crazy.
Yeah. So if you want to do drought tolerant, this is really the last month that we would probably do it ourselves.
Yeah, you can do it into April and May, but remember the drought tolerant plants typically go somewhat dormant in the hot months because that's their cycle. They light up when the natural rain comes, which is in the winter and spring. And in the summer, they conserve energy because they know they're not going to get much water. And so they go kind of dormant. So that's why we recommend doing them in the cooler months, is because you'll get more beauty from that time of year. And if you plant them now, they're going to just be getting settled in, and then the heat's going to come, and you're going to probably see them kind of hesitate for a few months and not do a whole lot.
And you want their roots to be happy. So if you're planting in the wintertime and you let their roots grow and get nurtured and, like Gina says, settled in, and because it's summertime's going to be hard for them. And
it is.
And they're still young plants, and they still need to be watered.
That's what everybody forgets. Oh, my gosh. I've had so many people who said, I planted these drought-tolerant plants, and then they died. And I said, well, did you water them? Well, they're drought-tolerant. And I said, well, yeah, but
they're not babies.
Not the first year. The first year you have to water them. And even the second year if we have, you know, a prolonged super hot spell. So do plant them if you are so inclined this month, you can have, oh my gosh, such beautiful, beautiful gardens and colorful gardens with grasses and sages and some of the native bloomers, the monkey flowers, that, you know, beautiful shades of orange and yellow. And
gorgeous.
Yeah, and our coast sunflower, you know, has that bright yellow daisy type flower. Lots of choices.
One thing to remember is don't plant your drought tolerant with your thirsty plants.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you got to remember, you got to have, if you're on a sprinkler system or a watering system, that zone needs to be all the similar types of plants. So you can't say, well, I like this hydrangea, and I like this drought tolerant, and I'm going to plant them next to each other or in the same bed with the same sprinkler system. It's not going to work.
No, somebody's going to die.
Or both of them. You're trying to make them both happy, and both of them die.
Yeah.
So make sure plant drought tolerant with drought tolerant and the water, more plants that need more water with plants that need more water.
Exactly. And sun requirements. Don't forget to think about your sun requirements. If you have, you know, roses that need, you know, 6 hours of sun, you know, you're going to want to plant flowers and other perennials that need 6 hours of sun. If you have a shady area, don't plant roses there.
And don't try to push it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, when we bought our house, somebody had planted like 28 rose bushes in our front driveway, which gets a lot of shade. And my husband spent years trying to nurture those roses in shade, and it didn't work. And he was finally became a master gardener, and it still didn't work. So there's certain things you can't mess with. You can't, if the plant needs sun, it needs sun.
Yeah,
and if the plant needs shade, it needs shade.
Our mantra as master gardeners is right plant, right place, right time. So that means, you know, tomatoes, that's the right plant for a place that gets 6 hours of sun.
Or more.
Or more. And that is planted in March, not
October.
October. So you always should ask yourself or tell yourself, because that's what I always have to tell myself, Tina, not the right plant for that place. You're not going to be happy with it there.
And you also have to be buyer beware, because sometimes when you go into nurseries or big box stores, I remember the first time I saw tomatoes in October, and I went, and I wasn't a master gardener yet. I said, you grow tomatoes in the winter? And they're like, oh yeah. So just because the plant is there doesn't mean it's the right time to plant it.
Right, and this is an especially, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's an especially good point this time of year. When you go to the nurseries or the big box retailers, they're still going to have the cool season plants like pansies and snapdragons out there because they're in full bloom and they're beautiful. And if you're having a party and you just want to throw something in that's in full bloom right now in a pot, absolutely get those. But if you plant those, March is probably okay. You'll still get, you know, March, April, May into June with those plants. But if they're still in the nursery come the end of May and you choose to plant them in May, they are not going to take the heat of our summer. And come July, all that money you spent on those plants is not going to be there anymore. They're just going to shrivel up and die. So do be aware. Ask the knowledgeable nursery people, I want plants that are going to take me through the whole summer. What would you suggest if you don't know yourself?
Exactly. And just because something looks really pretty and something else doesn't look really pretty, because those things that are coming now into fruition, they might not look so pretty right now, but they're going to carry you through the summer. And those, like you said, those pansies are not. So it's just heads up time. Well, Tina, we have about another 10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. Cool. I would like to talk about turf just a little bit. I think a lot of us have taken out turf, but some of us have left it in. I know you and I have left some in. We just became water misers and pushed that poor turf to its absolute limit of drought tolerance and lost, you know, little patches here and there. But with these winter rains, if you had some turf, oh my gosh, I'm seeing mine come back. You know, even the little patches that yeah. died out. Man, is it a happy camper.
Oh, loves it.
So loves happy. It. So anyway, if you maintained turf and you still have some, or you thought you had lost it, but it has come back because of all this great rain, now is the time to fertilize any kind of turf that you have, whether it's there are warm season turfs and cool season turfs, and you do want to fertilize both kinds at this time of year. That'll give you a nice green lawn. As the weather starts to heat up, do train your grasses like Katrina and I did last year to do with less water. It's okay to let them look a little bit wilty, because by doing that, you're going to encourage them to have deeper roots. You stretch instead of watering them, you know, like we have in the past, every day or every other day. I know Katrina and I were only watering ours twice a week all through the whole summer. And believe it or not, they sucked it up and dealt with it. We didn't mow as closely. We let the...
Put it on as high as you can.
High as we could.
4 or 6 inches.
Because then it's shading its own roots. And by stretching out the watering times, it caused those roots to reach further down into the soil. So I did just want to mention that to folks. Give your lawns a good fertilizing now, because they will love that, and it will keep them going through the summer. And do taper off their water as the season gets hotter, and see how little you can get away with.
And you really can get away with a lot. Just be mindful.
Yeah.
I keep telling people be mindful.
You got to look.
I mean, I'm under my water limits, and I have a lawn.
Yeah.
But I look at the 10-day weather forecast, and so you can't have certain things if you're mindful. If you're not mindful, it's not right for you then.
Right. Right. And then speaking of fertilizing, we do want to fertilize, just like I said, plant everything. You want to fertilize everything in March. You really want to, especially because we've had all of this rain, a lot of the nutrients, this is a good and a bad thing, right? A lot of the nutrients have been leached from the soil. We've had so much rain. Whatever nutrients were there have been leached out of the soil. So it will be especially important this year. You're probably seeing a lot of light green growth. I know on a lot of my, you know, perennial type plants, I was just noticing on my status, those poor status leaves are like lime green because they're like, we need nitrogen. There's no nitrogen in the soil. It's all washed away. So do go out and put fertilizer according to package directions around pretty much your whole yard, from your lawns to your shrubs to your trees. Add it to everything. It will love you, because this is when it is. The plants are going to take off growing this month. And if they have that extra nutrition source, wow, will they be happy.
Oh, yeah. And we've had this really good water to flush out all the salts. So you flush out all the salts, and now you put in nutrients, and you're going to have a happy yard.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited to see what the yard looks like this year. Oh, it's going to be so fun.
Especially with Tina and her flowers.
Yay. What else should we talk about? Oh, I know. Ah,
pests.
Yes. I've already been seeing the snails because of all the moisture. So get out there with snail bait right away. The earlier you control those populations of snails, the better. If you don't, you're probably not going to have anything left, because they're going to munch everything they possibly can.
Oh, and they will multiply so fast. Just take care of it now. You will have a lot less issues down the line.
They're very prolific. But again, because of all the moisture we've had, keep an eye out for a lot of pest proliferation and a lot of fungal disease proliferation. So just the best thing for disease and pest control in your garden is you. Get out there, take a look. When you see something, if you don't know what it is, go to take a clipping of it, go to a good nursery, take a photograph of it.
If you take a clipping, put it in a Ziploc bag.
Oh, good point.
You don't want to carry any pest to any nurseries or any place else, so put it in a Ziploc bag.
Good idea, yeah,
or
absolutely.
Or even better, take a really good photograph of it.
And you can also email those photos to our hotline, which is, Katrina?
Our hotline is... It is hotline, HOTLINE, at mgorange.ucanr.edu. Now, if you happen to be driving and you can't write all that down, Google UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California, and hit that webpage, and it has a link there to the hotline to ask questions, and it has all kinds of other information. We talked really fast today, and we threw out a lot of information. And just, you can go on there and you can ask questions in the hotline of anything we said or any other questions you have. Or if you want to know more about soils or pesticides, insecticides, and if you want to know more about anything about planting, there's probably a link on there for that.
Absolutely. And there's a whole team of master gardeners that take turns reading those emails to the hotline. And the cool thing about it is that you will get a personalized answer that has been researched specifically for your question. And it's just the best thing out there.
And we have people who love to research.
Yeah.
And they just love getting questions, and they love answering your questions, and that's how they give back.
Yeah, they do. And it's a pretty quick turnaround. I think within a couple of days you usually have an answer. So anyway, how are we doing? Have we about run out of time?
We're just about there. Any last thoughts, Tina? Are we there?
Oh my gosh, March is amazing. Go to nurseries and just plant, and get ready to have some amazing events in your garden in May, because your garden's going to be gorgeous.
And March is a great time to do it, as we've been telling you about. Go have fun, enjoy yourself. It is a fun month in the garden.
And your soil should be so easy to work this year because of all the rain. It'll just be nice and soft.
Easy to pull up those weeds that are growing, huh?
Oh, that's the other thing. We didn't even talk about weeds, but that's pretty self-explanatory. Going to see a lot of them this year.
Pull them out. Before you start planting. Weed.
Oh, good to talk to you again, Katrina. Happy gardening.
Oh, thank you, and happy gardening to you too.